We're going to turn to our Bible reading now, which you will find in Ruth chapter 2. And you'll find it printed in the diary for you. If you don't have a Bible to hand, you can follow it there. And in case you missed Ruth chapter 1, it tells the story of a Jewish family, Naomi and Elimelech and their two boys, who in a time of famine left their home to go and find food in the land of Moab. And on the one hand, that sounds like a reasonable thing to do, but it was actually a disastrous thing to do. They left the promised land where God had promised to bless his people, and they trusted in Moab, which was enemy territory. They stayed there 10 years, the boys got married, but by the end of the 10 years, all the men in the family were dead, and Naomi was left with her two daughters-in-law. So Naomi decides to head back home, and she takes one of her daughters-in-law with her, Ruth, who's not an Israelite. She's a Moabite. But Ruth pledges her allegiance to the God of Israel. Having hit rock bottom, this poor family take the long walk home. These widows, the most vulnerable and needy group of people at that time, they arrive in Bethlehem just as harvest is about to get underway. And as we read this chapter together, we'll see what God is going to do for these two widows. And Rachel's going to read that for us. Thank you.
Morning. Ruth chapter 2. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Let's go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they called back. Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, "Whose young woman is that?" The foreman replied, "She is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting, and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She said, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you have left your father and mother and your homeland and come to live with people you did not know. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your girls." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread, and dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull some stalks from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field until the evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I work with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "The Lord has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. That man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers." Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvest were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law.
Thank you very much. Well, there is something that the writer of this book of Ruth really does not want us to forget. It's not that he thinks we've got a poor memory. It's just that the more we're reminded of it, the more remarkable the story is. Time and time again, it's as if the writer of this story says to us, do not forget, whatever you do, who Ruth is. Don't forget where she's come from. Let me show you what I mean. The closing verse of chapter 1, which kind of acts as this bridge between the scene that ended in chapter 1, the scene that starts in chapter 2, you have this summary. Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabite. Then, verse 2 of our chapter, what do we have? Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, when the foreman of Boaz's field is asked about Ruth, he says, "She is the Moabite who came back from Moab." Verse 21, the writer says, "Then Ruth the Moabite said." He's going out of his way to repeat for us where Ruth has come from. He's going out of his way to show us her foreignness. You see that in Ruth's own words in verse 10 as well. "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" And even that sense of being an outsider, she feels it in verse 13. She says, "I do not have the standing of," or "I am not one of your servants." This keeps getting shoved in front of our noses, doesn't it? This girl doesn't belong here. This is not where she's from. Surely she's taken an enormous risk in coming to Israel. This commitment to care for her mother-in-law, it's a dangerous one. This is surely only magnified when you think about how this would be heard by the original Jewish reader of this book. The Moabites were their historic enemies. And yet here she is. She's chosen to come under the care of the Lord. And as Boaz puts it in verse 12, she's come under the care of the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. This is where Ruth, the outsider, has come to find shelter from the storm. So what's involved in that? What does it mean for her to come and take refuge under the wing of the God of Israel? Well, I'm really struck by Ruth's initiative in verse 2. I mean, so to speak, she's the guest here. She's the visitor who has come to stay in Israel. And yet she's the one who is proactive. She wants to get out there and provide for her mother-in-law and herself. But she heads out there with a plan because she knows what God provides. And I think that's the starting point here. She knows what God provides. She says, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." That is a way of explaining a word that keeps appearing and reappearing throughout this chapter. It's the word glean. We don't tend to use that word, do we? But you must have noticed it, I think, something like 12 times the word glean comes up in this chapter alone. And what she says there in verse 2 is the definition of what it means to glean. It is to go into the fields, pick up the leftover grain behind anyone who's willing to let you. It's something that was enshrined in Israelite law. It was a way in which God was to make provision for the poorest people in society. It was a message to farmers that when you come to harvest your fields, don't try and gobble up every last bit that you can for your own profit. Instead, leave some round the edges. Don't go right into the corners of the field. Leave some so that the poor people, those who've got no means of supporting themselves, so that they can have something. It was a way of showing care for the weakest in society. And so you see, this is what's interesting to me, is that Ruth knows that this law exists. She knows that she has some right to go into an Israelite's field and to gather up some leftover harvest, some leftover barley in this case. She knows what God has promised to provide for her. She's been made aware of the sort of society that Israel was meant to be. One where people like her were provided for. It's a picture of how God's people were meant to function. That as they lived according to God's law, therefore they reflect God's goodness, they reflect God's character in their society, and the nations would be drawn to come to them. Alas, what we read of repeatedly in Israel's history is their neglect of the widow, of the orphan, of the foreigner, of begrudging them what God had promised them. I wonder what Naomi thinks as she sends Ruth out, as she agrees with this proposal. Is she waiting for Ruth's naive optimism to be disappointed as she finds that there really is no one out there willing to care for a Moabite? Maybe. But Ruth knows, because she had something of God's law shared with her, she knows to go, and that the God who she has committed herself to has promised to provide for her. This is one of the most basic things that we need to be convinced of as well. It's all very well to be persuaded that God exists. I mean, the fact that there's anything here rather than nothing is a pretty strong testimony to that in itself. And that might be enough to convince you that God exists. But it is quite another thing to be convinced that God cares about you, isn't it? Quite another thing. To think that God would provide anything for you, that's a very different proposition. And we have every reason to wonder whether God would provide anything for us, because somewhat like a Moabite in Israel, we are outsiders. Our lives do not come up to scratch when we stand in the presence of God. We make bad choices. We think terrible thoughts. We do bad things. Why should God look near us? But the overwhelming message of the Bible is that He does. The Bible is the story of how God creates and then rescues human beings, however far they may wander from Him. And that leads into the next thing to see here in our passage. And that is that coming to God for shelter is to know the grace of God. Back in chapter 1, when Naomi was trying to discourage her daughters-in-law from returning to Bethlehem with her, she prayed for them, and she asked that the Lord would show them kindness. And that word for kindness is much deeper than just kindness. It's not properly reflected in any single word in English. It's a word for God's special love for his people. It's the love that comes out of that promise that God makes to his people. It's his covenant love. And that is what Ruth finds here when she comes to take shelter under God's wing. Because it's the same word she uses when she decides to go out gleaning behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. That's that same word again. In whose eyes I find that covenant love. So out she goes, and she finds a part of the field which so happens to be owned by Boaz, this man of standing, this worthy man that we've had mentioned in verse 1, a man who we're shown lives life very much aware of the presence of God. Just the glimpse that we're given in verse 4, I mean, you just think, why would you include this detail in such a short story? But here we have in verse 4, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you, they answered. We're getting something of the heart of Boaz here. He's a man who lives very aware of the presence of God. You see, that's how he greets his workers, but you see it also in how he prayed for Ruth down in verse 12. He says, may the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you've come to take refuge. But even though he prays that God would do this for Ruth, it is Boaz himself who will be God's instrument of showing this care, this covenant love to Ruth. So let's just quickly note what Boaz does for her. He protects Ruth. I mean, he's not only happy for her to come and glean in his field, he wants to go even further and tells her not to glean anywhere else. You see that in verse 8. And you see that it's not necessarily the safest thing for Ruth to be engaged in. You see that promise that Boaz makes. He's told his men not to lay a hand on her. The suggestion being that maybe if she went to some other part of the field, workers would not be quite so restrained. And that does seem to be confirmed at the end. Did you notice that when Naomi says, oh, it's good for you to stay in Boaz's field because in someone else's field you might be harmed. This is dangerous work that she's engaged in, and yet God has provided protection for her in the form of Boaz. Boaz provides for her needs. What we see in Boaz is that his awareness of the presence of God is seen in how he doesn't restrict himself to being a mere letter of the law kind of guy. What I mean is, he doesn't say, well, okay, it's your right to take the barley from the edge of the field. Feel free to do that, and we wish you well, on you go. I mean, that couldn't be further away from what he's doing, even though if he was to do that, he would be a law-abiding citizen. He would be honoring the law that has been laid down by God. But this is not what Boaz is like. His heart goes out to Ruth, and he tells her to stay. More than that, he says to the workers, you know what, leave behind bundles of grain for her to pick up as she goes. More than that, verse 14, he gives her her lunch. He encourages her to take bread, dip it in the vinegar. He keeps plying her with this roasted grain, and so much so that she's stapped. She's got left over. She's got more than she can eat. And it's Ruth that tells us in verse 21, he even said to me, stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain. And that's what she does. Not just for the rest of the week, but for the whole of the barley harvest, the whole of the wheat harvest too. I mean, there you're talking almost 2 months. She stays there. She's provided for. There is something comical about where this ends up, I think. I don't know, I have this image in my mind of Boaz. He's drawn to Ruth, and he wants to show her that he does care for her. He wants to show this kindness to her, but he forgets to stay cool in showing this kindness to the young lady. He doesn't realize, perhaps, that in his willingness to provide for her needs, he ends up giving her more than she could ever use. And here you have Ruth. She's a hard-working woman. She's going to take everything she can get. She gleans all day long. She spends her night threshing out the barley. You see that in verse 17. That's separating out the barley from the chaff. And when she does all that, what has she been allowed to take? An ephah of barley. Now, we don't buy and sell things in ephahs today, so we're not sure what that means, are we? She went home with a 2-stone bag of barley on her shoulders. You know, like a big sack of tatties. She carried it all the way back home. She went to Boaz's field empty to ask for permission to pick up the scraps from the edge of the field. And here we find her in verse 18. She's staggering home under the weight of this thing. And inevitably, this is something that costs Boaz. To provide for her means he has to sacrifice something of his own. His own profits are going to be down this year. You see, Ruth came under the wing of the God of Israel to find shelter from the storm. And she found the Lord to be true to his word, and to be so even more abundantly than surely she could ever have imagined. Naomi, her mother-in-law, with deep sorrow, had told the women of Bethlehem that she had gone out from Bethlehem full and come back empty. And on this morning, Ruth, the Moabite, the foreigner, she went out empty. And she came back heavy laden. God provided for them, and did so through the kindness of Boaz. And that's Naomi's understanding. She helps interpret these events for us. Verse 20. It seems to be a deliberately ambiguous statement. She's told that the name of the man who I worked with is Boaz. Naomi says, verse 20, "The Lord bless him. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." The ambiguity there is, well, who has not stopped showing kindness? Is it the Lord or is it Boaz? But surely she knows that both are the same thing. Ruth took God at his word, found herself overloaded with his loving kindness towards her. Well, as I said earlier, the Bible tells the story of how God creates and rescues human beings from their sin. And who could have imagined that the rescue that God promised, in fact, all the way back in Genesis 3, when Adam and Eve fell, and the promise that there would be a seed of the woman who would crush the head of the serpent, who ever imagined that the rescue would be as amazing as it is? That it would be more than giving us food or giving us lodgings, but it would be God giving us his son. We come to him as foreigners, deserving nothing from him, and yet he sent his son to live and die and rise again all in our place, to show us his grace and mercy, to show us that kindness, that covenant love that was costly for him to give. God the Son became a human being, suffered and died on a cross, the death we deserve, to forgive us, to restore us to God. This is the abundant love that God showers on us. Not that he merely gives us stuff, but that he gives us himself. And in doing that, the promise that we will be accepted by God, the promise of protection from God's judgment, the promise of providing all that we need to be right with God forever. God's love comes to us in Jesus Christ. And we will only ever know that love personally if we personally come to Jesus Christ in faith, believing all he claims to be, all he claims to do, and believing that all of that was for me. and we change direction, and we spend our lives for him. Of course, Boaz in Ruth chapter 2, and we're going to see next week, his generosity knows no bounds, really. He is so generous because he understands what God is like. That certainly seems to be the impression that we're given. His prayerfulness, his understanding that God's refuge for this poor widow doesn't just fall from the sky. You know, when he makes that prayer for her that the Lord would bless her under whose wing she's come for refuge. He doesn't just say, well, I've prayed that now and maybe God will do that for her. He realizes that refuge for this widow comes through God's people, reflecting who God is in their community. And there is an enduring nature to what we see here in Ruth 2. You think of the New Testament letter of James. James warns about empty religion. And he writes in the first chapter of James, he says, religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. And why is that pure religion? Because it's that reflects God's heart, to be compassionate to those who are in need. And if there's anyone in this world that should understand that, it's Christians, because they've come to realize that they were the most needy people of all, sinners who needed God's compassion. And so he calls us to reflect our understanding of that, our understanding of him, that we are not slow to move towards those who need compassion. And that is, of course, what drives churches to do all manner of good works in their communities. The people of God should have a reputation for that. That's why Pauline is so committed to the work of CAP, because she shares God's concern for those who are struggling with debt. And I wonder, where else do we see these great needs in our community? To what degree are we reflecting God's concern for the needy in those situations? Are we known as a church that cares for their community? Or are we known for being a cozy group that only cares for ourselves? The mission of the church is to make Jesus known. But unless we are meaningfully engaged with our community, to whom are we making him known? Well, there's one more thing I want to mention. Coming to God for shelter involves knowing that God provides, knowing God's covenant love, and last of all, knowing God's sovereign control. Or like we see here, knowing that God guides our steps. I love this about this part of the story. The writer does a wonderful job of setting this up for us. The opening verse introduces Boaz, which is interesting. It seems to be almost out of nowhere, but we're being set up. There is this relative that the family has, a good man called Boaz. And then in verse 3, there's almost this sarcastic tone. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz. Or more literally, it's something like, well, it happened to happen that she ended up in Boaz's field. And then in verse 4, again, more literally, it is, behold, Boaz. That's how it's written. Behold, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem. We're to see that there's an unseen hand at work here. Ruth goes into a field, and even when she meets Boaz, to her he's just a kind farmer. But then listen to how Naomi interprets those events again. Verse 20, the Lord bless him. He's not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. That man is our close relative. Naomi, for all of her bitterness that we saw in chapter 1, she is still able to see that this is God at work, orchestrating events to transform circumstances that seemed utterly hopeless. This is what God does. And we're going to see next week, this is just the beginning. God's going to do more than give these widows grain. He's going to give them a future. He's going to give them a family. He's going to give them a savior. Think of other examples we might know of. Coming up next month, when a young couple are forced by an emperor's decree to travel to Bethlehem to take part in a census, a journey they surely didn't want to take because the girl was pregnant, we find that actually God was moving things so that the Savior of the world would be born in Bethlehem just as he promised he would. But God's sovereign reach is not restricted to the pages of the Bible. It reaches to all of those things in your life right now. Those things that you would never choose. Those things that we rightly do all we can to avoid. Our health fails, our jobs disappear, our finances fall apart, our friends abandon us, and on and on and on. We could all share stories, couldn't we? Be sure, if you belong to Jesus Christ today, that none of these are allowed in your life for your harm. But for the one who trusts in Jesus, they are to bring you closer to him. They're pushing you along that road that leads to being with Jesus forever. I'm going to close with a verse that's often recited quite tritely, but it really isn't meant to be a trite verse. The promise comes to the Christian that you can shelter under God's wing because his sovereign power and his use of that sovereign power is to care for your soul. Because in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. And that purpose is that we would be like Jesus. Amen. We're going to close there.